Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k. Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast, where each week we bring you education and information that will help you take your next step in real estate. My name is Lauren Wells, and I am here with my co-host, Chris Seveny, on this early Friday morning. On today's episode, we want to talk about questions that you should be prepared to answer as a sponsor. So we've talked about questions you should ask when interviewing a sponsor. And on this episode, we want to discuss top questions I'm getting asked, Chris is getting asked, other sponsors are probably getting asked when investors are looking to invest money with them. So how are you, Chris, this morning?
I am good. And I just want people to know who are watching or listening, the commitment to Lauren that it's basically 5:30 in the morning her time. You can see it's still dark out. And it's a Friday. So 5:30 on a Friday, she comes in, starts recording the podcast. And first time ever, I think, recording, we were able to hit it on the first take.
Wow, so, maybe 5:30 is my time.
Yeah, but those outtakes. So we have a woman, Tony, who works with us as well. And she does a lot of the editing. And she created basically a bloopers video of Lauren and I in our podcast. And I got to give her credit. It is awesome. Bloopers video she did.
Good job, Tony. When you're listening and trying to edit this one, shout out to you.
We're going to try and make this one as easy as possible for you, Tony, because that last one was pretty painful.
As I cough. Yeah, it was funny, but I thought the bloopers outtake was funny. You can see it on our social media sites, but I don't know if anyone else will find it funny, but I was busting up laughing watching us.
No, I was busting up laughing during them and watching. So,
yes. So, with all of that, good morning, everybody. Yes, it is super early here, but I love mornings. It's quiet. It's when I get my time in. So, I mean, we could probably do a whole other episode on that. Like, how do you get started with investing when you're managing kids and life? And where do you find the time?
Yeah,
we could probably do a lot of episodes on that. Let's talk about these questions that I'm getting, that Chris is getting, that other sponsors, I'm sure, are getting when people talk with them about, who are interested in investing, want to get on a call. What questions am I fielding might be also different from questions Chris is fielding. So I'd say, Chris, what is probably the top question that you're getting when you speak with people? Because it's probably different than what I'm getting.
Yeah. And it's interesting because this topic also came up, just add a little color as well to it. Yesterday, I was on a call with some other investors and they're interested in starting a fund. And I went through a lot of the lessons learned that I had over the 5+ funds that we've done on things that work and things to make sure you understand. And then we were just talking about also kind of things like what to be prepared for. So that's really, and then again, Lauren and I have been having multiple conversations, making sure we're all on the same page in regards to the questions and that come up with the investors. But the first big question we've received recently is the economy. What's going on with the economy? What's going on with interest rates? What's going on with housing? And with it being a fund focused on real estate, and ours really actually on the finance side of real estate, the inflation question and overall real estate and economy comes up probably, I'd say, number one. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'd say there's like top three questions I get asked, and that's probably definitely in the top three. Or like, how does the economic environment affect this investment? Anything with the economy, inflation, stock market, everything, how does that affect what I'm investing in with you?
And just for everyone listening, these questions aren't just pertaining to real estate or anything. This could be any type of money raise you're doing, whether you're raising VC money or money for a business or for a real estate fund. It really doesn't matter. So
the economic environment affects them all in some way. Yes. I mean, if you look at the VCs right now, they're kind of holding tight to their cash. So that's a huge factor for them. But so I guess, do you want to answer, like, we can answer these in relation to like just broad, but we can also give an example specifically to our specific investment and what we invest in. Obviously, this one will be more specific because we can't answer how the economic environment is affecting all different assets. We're not, are all different investment types because we're not experts in all investment types. But specifically to note investing, when someone asks, how is the market affecting this specific asset class? What would an investment, what would you say?
Well, first, our fund is very diverse, where we're going to have hundreds of thousands of assets in our fund versus one asset, which could be a multifamily building. I think that's the most comparative analysis that we hear from people is their multifamily investors. So by having a diverse, broad portfolio, also as the lender on a loan and us not leveraging it either. So if it's a $100,000 house and there's a $100,000 loan, we're going to buy that at a discount. So we have that built-in equity. Plus, it's also the leverage is the investor's cash. It's not as if we have a $100,000 investment and we have bank money and our money, which limits what we can do. By having the investors as the leverage, that really gives us so many options and exit strategies to allow us to be very flexible. And with us, if we do take a property back, we can rent it, we can rehab it, we can resell it, we can sell or finance it. If you have a rental with a mortgage on it and the price of the drops, you can rent it, but you can't sell it. It's, you're really tied to what you can do. And we watch the markets, we watch real estate, and we're making sure that we're not buying all of our notes in Phoenix, which is an area that many people are concerned with right now with all the iBuyers. So that, and also one last thing, it's, I'll say information and education. We follow a lot of different information pieces to get our own analysis of what's going on, because depending on the media right now is very challenging because of some of the stories that put out might be a little biased. So it's very important to get a lot of information, analyze that data, which me as an engineer and data is just, I mean, to me, that's a dream.
Well, so let's tie that back. Like, I guess more specifically, people will say, well, what about the housing market right now? Like, if prices were to fall, if values were to fall, they've risen so aggressively in the last few years, like how would that impact what you guys are doing?
Well, first, we are assuming right now, we've adjusted our models for when we go to acquire based on asset value. So we are discounting asset values in our models today that we run. But also, because we've had such a big run-up over the years, most properties now have that built-in equity. And if a borrower owes us $250,000 on their loan, and the house went from $300,000 to $400,000, as long as that property doesn't drop, and well, if it was at 250, say we bought it for 200, okay? They owe 250, we buy the loan for 200, okay? And I'm going to talk a little slow right now. So we buy a loan for 200.
Good job.
Yeah. It's 250,000 is how much they owe us. So we bought it for 50,000 less. The house is worth 400. How far does that house have to drop before our cost is quote unquote underwater? It's 5:30 in the morning. I'm asking Lauren a math question.
Oh, you're asking me.
Yeah.
So with that 400, it'd have to drop below 200.
Correct. So it has to have a 50% drop. Mm-hmm. Now, even if it does that, okay, you can still work out a new plan with the borrower. Or if you take it back, you could rent it till it starts to increase, because we are the bank and they're not paying. So we control, we're in control. That's, I think, the biggest thing to remember is we are the ones in control. We are the bank, unlike other types of syndications. So for us, what I'd like to think of is we have a lot of built-in cushion, I guess is the best way to put it, compared to if all the other real estate investors that are out there lost 50% on the value of their property, they would be, in my mind, unless they bought again 10 years ago, they would be in a lot of pain. For us, I view it as not painful.
Well, and
did I answer that?
Yeah. And another thing that when I answer this question, another thing I talk about with investors is like the acquisition, the price of acquisition for us. So yes, housing prices have like skyrocketed in the past few years. Our acquisition price, because of that, has also gone up. So would you agree?
Yes. The pricing has gone up. Yeah. So that has compressed returns slightly. It's compressed them compared to what they've done in the past.
I feel like it just kind of mirrors the market as far as, so as prices come down, we're not going to be paying the same prices we have been for assets. So as prices go up, acquisition prices go up. However, as prices come down, mm-hmm. our prices go down. So it's not like mm-hmm. prices come down and we're still paying mm-hmm. these crazy fees and our equity is less. And so that's something that I think is important for investors to know.
And when we run our sensitivity analysis, again, this all comes into play. But one of the other things I like to talk to people about with being the bank is you own a house. If your house drops by 20%, okay, your house dropped by 20%. You're working. You're getting paid. So you will most likely continue to pay your mortgage. So jobs is a bigger factor that we watch for than housing market. I mean, housing's definitely important.
Well, before I lose this, and to that point, when it comes to the media, yes, a lot of companies are laying off, but I saw a post the other day, someone got laid off from their job and they were so worried because all they've been seeing is all these layoffs that have been happening. And that's what they said. They're like, I actually got a job super quickly that was double my salary. And I just didn't expect that because all I've been reading was how all these tech companies are laying off, but there are so many people still hiring. So I think, again, it's kind of what we hear is going on and what's like we see actually happening are two different things. So being aware of that as well, like you said, really like digging below the headlines.
Yeah. And I could talk hours on this topic, which we don't have. So, but that does kind of play into, I think, the next question that I'll pose to you is, what is my risk in this investment? Or what is the risk?
Yeah. In comparison to what is always my question. Back, like in comparison to your money sitting in a savings account at a bank that is FDIC insured. Like, we are not a bank. Like, yes, we act as the bank when we are acquiring these assets, but we are not a bank in the sense that money is not FDIC insured. So it's always in comparison to what? Like, what? And that's a very like personal question on the investor needing to know what their risk threshold is. I get this question a lot, but it depends. I really get it from people who have a lower risk tolerance than someone who's like invested in a ton of different syndications or funds and kind of diversified their portfolio. I don't typically get that. They know what their risk threshold is. They're probably not getting on the phone with me if this is outside of their tolerance. So I'd say in comparison to what, like if the bank is a risk level of one being super safe, and the stock market right now is a 10, being you don't know what you're going to get, probably not great any given day. Yeah, it's just up and down right now, mostly down. I would say we fall somewhere maybe like a 4 or 5 at this point. I mean, conservative, I would say probably less. So I think I always kind of ask them, like, in comparison to what? Like, what are you benchmarking this against? What have you invested in before? And then kind of tying it back to your question of how does this risk usually is they're asking that one because this is not something they're not familiar with. So it's more familiarizing them with notes in comparison to the economics of today.
So I have a feeling me asking that question threw you for a curveball because you were going to go somewhere else.
I was going to ask you that question, but okay. I mean, I do get asked this a lot, so it's fine. But
so a few things. One, as a sponsor, the risk, be honest what the risk is involved in any investment. And we'll talk about providing the G word later. Yep. But the
That's my question, don't take it.
Yeah, I'm not taking it. Don't worry. I know that one's like, you know. But one of the things that I see a lot is when people ask risk is any type of investment, there's basically kind of, I'll call it the seesaw. There's the risk and the return, or it's really not the seesaw, but as your risk goes up, you should have a higher potential for return. And I saw, and I sent this to you yesterday, I saw a sponsor promoting a syndication that is 110% return over 2 years. And I just see that. And to me, I would like jump in my spaceship and fly far away because how many people out there or how many companies out there that are really, really smart give their investors 110% over 2 years? Now, I know Apple doesn't, Microsoft doesn't, pretty big companies. And again, real estate, Warren Buffett, I think historic return is somewhere in the 20s. This person's predicting they can top Warren Buffett 5X over a 2 year period, essentially. So think about that. So when you are as a sponsor, and I'm going to answer this kind of as a sponsor when you're setting things up, be realistic. But if you do think you have this type of grand slam deal that's in there, put the numbers and then put a high risk factor in. If your exit on an asset, for example, is say it's a new construction development. and you're building condos. Okay. And it's going to take 2 years to build and 2 years absorption to sell the units. And at that point in time, it's like a grand slam. Well, you know what? What's it look like if it's 3 years to build and 4 years absorption? And if at that point, it's still providing very good returns that investors would be very interested in, that's what you can basically start underwriting in your pro forma so you understand the sensitivity and that risk. Again, if somebody's throwing out their returns that just don't make sense, especially on accredited investors, many of them are going to see right through that.
So that was what I was going to talk about. Like what, and this really, again,
sorry,
this comes back to the, no, it's great. This like segued right into it, is it really comes back to the individual investor. Like I'm not having the risk conversation really with people who are accredited, see the 8% or 10% if they qualify for bonus shares and come to me and they're like, oh, it's more of getting to know me and mm-hmm. you and doing research on us and making sure we're credible. Where I see this question coming up a lot is with people who, again, this is the first fund they've invested in, or they're not familiar with notes, or they haven't done a ton of diversification. They're like heavily in the stock market. So it's interesting because people who aren't as familiar see 8% and they're like, wow, that's great. Like, is that real? And they see that as like the 110%.
Yeah.
So you have that. No, you do. It's true. Yeah. You know, they're used to getting 2-3%, 1% in the bank or bonds or CDs. And so then you look at other investors who have invested in real estate, who have invested in different portfolios, and they see 8%, and that's super safe to them. They're like, 8% is all, like, that's like a no-brainer. They're like, they are used to getting 10+% doing hard money lending or something else. So it is also very interesting. This question kind of ties in and gives me a sense of like what type of investor they are from a sponsor / investor relations perspective. Little inside scoop there. But it also leads into the next question that I get.
Before you jump that, just want to jump right in. And you, because on this point, some people see, so our fund starts at 8%. Some people see that and say, no way you could ever hit that.
Yep.
Okay. And then I have investors who've invested with me in the past.
That you spoiled.
I share this with them and they're like, oh, I can't touch 8%. I won't invest in anything less than 20. And I'm like, okay, like I can't give you 20 on this type of venture, but it's very different based on the two perspectives. So as a sponsor, you do need to understand when you're going to market this, what are you offering and what is your target audience? Because if you're offering a nice preferred return, is it people who are looking for the risk or people who want their money to basically be hair on fire, light it up and see what can happen? Now, unfortunately, I think what's going to happen is over the last 5-6 years, many people, it was very easy to make money in real estate and make really good returns. I don't think that's going to be as easy anymore. So a lot of these deals that were being underwritten with very low interest rates or exit strategies, I think those are really going to start to, if it was a 5-7 year exit, it's going to end up being a 10-11 year exit because they can't exit, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, well, that comes to like the lockup. That's a different question, but
yeah.
Leading into my next question.
Yes.
The question I get a ton, again, it kind of leads to the type of investor I'm speaking with is, I get this via email. I get this
Facebook.
This is my top question that I get. I'm sure maybe, no, I don't know if you get this. This is your number one. This is by far takes the lead. Is this guaranteed? Is this guaranteed? What's the guarantee? Like, which is very different from what's the risk, but they kind of go hand in hand. So Chris, what would your answer to this question?
So first, if you're a sponsor and you tell somebody something is guaranteed, then you just got yourself in a lot of trouble.
So disclaimer, nowhere on any of our marketing content, anything, do we use the word guaranteed. We're not even allowed to use the word guaranteed.
No, nobody should use the word guaranteed. And what's funny is we use the word aim because you can't say we're giving you this because
that's seen as a guarantee.
Yeah, that's seen as a guarantee. This is what we're aiming for, where we have some confidence that we can provide that, but we're not guaranteeing anything. So A, you have some haters that kind of pick on that. But anybody that guarantees anything, the only thing that's pretty much guaranteed, as the saying goes, is death and taxes. So that's it. And nobody should be guaranteeing. No one's saying you're going to get this. We are targeting, we're aiming, we're projecting based on this is what may anticipate, but who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. And that's where it really comes into like doing your homework on who the sponsors are, what their track record is, the market specifically like that they're investing in. So it's more, I think, comes down to knowing the asset class in comparison to, again, the economics of the current time, your risk threshold, and who are the people you're investing with. I don't get enough. Who is Chris? Who are you? Who's your team? That's always like the last question. And it's kind of like, oh, by the way, can you tell me a little bit about yourself? Can you tell me a little bit more about Chris and the team behind this? That's when I'm investing in something. It's kind of like when you're hiring people, everything, like if I get a reference, that person is automatically like has more trust with in my book. So it's like what you're investing in the asset class is just as important as who you're investing with. Do they have a good online reputation? Can you Google them? And what comes up when you Google them? Hopefully it's not bad stuff, but it is, I would definitely ask them straight up about that.
Yeah. If you do have skeletons in the closet, you definitely want to come out with those, whether you've had personal bankruptcies in the past or you've been lawsuits and stuff like that, which most syndications you probably wouldn't want to be sponsoring anyways. But that point too, as a sponsor, depending on where you're at in your career, you need to have some type of social media or some type of online presence, especially as you're getting started, to let people know who you actually are. You're a real human person. I like to do a lot of Zoom calls and I joke with people because I'll be on the call. My son will come down, run down, ask for a cookie or a candy and stuff and show like, I'm a father. I'm a person. I'm a real human being. I'm not somebody hanging in a bunker in a foreign country. And that is basically trying to take somebody's money. Now, if you get to a point of somebody in our space who I think a lot of people look up to, like a Dave Van Horn, who's raised $250 million plus and has been doing it for 25 years, you know, he's got that street cred. Everybody already knows who he is. So he doesn't need to be active in that role. But if you're somebody trying to build a brand, you have to have some type of presence, I think, online to let people know who you are. Because if you are invisible online, to me, as a sponsor, you may set off some red flags for people.
Yeah. So, and it's funny because we're talking about basically kind of going back to our questions that we think you should ask sponsors. And it's all about like them and their history, their track record, their business model, all of that. Whereas the questions we always get are more of like, what's the risk? Is this guaranteed? How's this doing in comparison to, or like, how's this impacted by the market of today? Mm-hmm. So it's just super interesting. It's one of the last questions I always get. Oh, I feel like I already know you because I've listened to the podcast. Like yesterday, I was with someone and it was a husband and wife. And the wife was asking a little bit about me. The husband was like, oh, I already know you. I listened to the podcast. And I'm like, oh, cool. I feel like that's a compliment. I feel like it is a good way to get to know people. And I mean, this is part of why we do it.
And it's interesting too, because it just popped in my head. As a sponsor, we put out questions to ask investors, ask the sponsors. Sponsors should go read that because it's basically a lot of things that you should get asked, like understand. And as a sponsor, you better be able to answer, how do you financially report? How often do you financially report? How do you report to your investors? What type of platforms and systems are you using? There's the overall basis of that. How many investors are going to be involved?
Why this fund over other funds? How do you make money? How do investors get paid? Those are other common questions I get. So how do you make money? We can start with that.
Well, of course, it's always with the assets that you need to acquire, of course. And that's kind of a question that kind of rolls into something that just popped in my head and I'm just all over the place right now. So my brain's just spinning. But what if you don't raise enough money? What if you basically can't find assets? There's all those types of, I'll call them risks. Yeah. As well, that are questions that people ask. What is the minimum you're looking to raise X amount of dollars? What is the minimum you really need to raise to make this thing work? And that's a question we get asked a lot as well.
And they should have that answer. We've modeled for us, for example, we've run several, I mean, Chris, there's been many several?
I'm taking a little offense to that. If you're telling several.
I did make that. Like, I think I have said that to one of your current investors. I was like, oh, you know, Chris, we've literally modeled this off of every possible scenario, like every different raise threshold. So they should have answers to, well, what happens if you only raise this amount? Mm-hmm. You know, have you thought about that? Mm-hmm. Have you budgeted for that?
One question that gets asked too, that you have to be truly upfront with people and don't blow smoke, you know, where is if somebody asks, well, how much have you raised? You have to be honest with those people. If you raise $3 million, don't tell them, oh yeah, we're like $5 million. Be be honest with them wherever.
Yeah, but
you know,
also
let them know where you're at in the race too.
Yeah,
you know, or why you're at that number.
Yeah. And like, how long have you been raising money? Where are you at? Also for us, I mean, twice a year?
Yeah.
That we have to provide audited financials. Mm-hmm. So twice a year, we're providing audited financials. People could go look at that. So if you're saying one thing and your books a few months later say something completely different, I mean, you're going to look, or for us at least, would not look great. So yeah, just be honest with people. And
well, yeah, every syndication, they have to file taxes. And in your taxes, if it's a typical LLC syndication, you're going to be a member that you have X amount of percentage. So if you're in a $10 million fund and you gave somebody $100,000 and you're thinking, oh, I got 1%, and all of a sudden it comes back and you all of a sudden have 3%, and it's like, oh, wait a second, like something's not adding up here. So
yeah. Oh, how do investors get paid? Well, I think actually, let me back up. How do you make money? Sometimes there's the broad of how do we make money as a business in mm-hmm. Mortgage notes, but mm-hmm. then it's from other investors, or from mm-hmm. like investors who have invested before. They're like, well, how does the company make money? Where, like, mm-hmm. if you're giving us 8%, are there management fees? Are there expenses? Mm-hmm. Are we getting paid before or after those? Mm-hmm. So I think that's another question that comes up. I've kind of like lumped a few questions together, but are there management fees is one. For us, for example, no, we have one expense. It's payroll. Then investors get paid. And then any excess profit goes to the company. That's mm-hmm. sometimes I think what people are looking for too, when they're like, how do you make money? Like you personally.
Well, we have more than just payrolls and expense, but there's true expenses. We don't have fees. Yeah,
exactly.
We don't have fees. We don't have an acquisition fee, a disposition fee, a management fee that you see on a lot of the other types of deals. I just had a really good thing pop in my head.
Oh, this happens
I lost
to me all
it.
The time.
Yeah,
that's
no.
Great.
Yeah, it's part of old age, I think.
Wow.
No, I had to take that dig. Sorry.
But that's usually me. I'm like, oh, you're like talking and I have like a good question and then you keep talking. I'm like, I lost it.
Oh, it came back to me.
So, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Like, how do you make money? And for me, because I've ran one or two spreadsheets on things, we analyze things like our bifurcated returns, which are how much are we making when we're holding the asset and it's performing versus how much do we make on the sale? Are we making 10% maybe on the asset while we're holding it? And then on the sale, it's like 30% or 20% on the sale. So combined, that return is maybe an 18%. And understanding where your returns come from, I think, is part of a question we get asked from really sophisticated investors that I've seen also in multifamily deals. It's like, okay, you're holding this. Are you making any money while you're holding it? Or are you only making money when you refinance or exit it, to understand the returns? Because that is important for you as a sponsor, because the reason they're asking that question is that ties back to what is the risk? Because as an investor, they're thinking in their head, okay, if all my profit is tied to the exit of this thing 5 years from now, that's a long time and a lot can happen. But if only a percent of it is tied to then that in 3 years, we're still making something, then the risk tolerance or risk perspective or sensitivity is significantly less.
Yeah. And I think all these questions really come back to risk and what specifically you're looking for as an investor. Yeah. Like, are you looking for income? Like, we can answer all these questions.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of the day, it's like, what are you looking for?
Lauren's thinking right now, I can't believe Chris just talked about bifurcating returns and sensitivity analysis at 6 a.m. on a Friday. Like, please.
I had a good question and then I did what you did and lost it. But I think, how soon do investors get paid? That's a question I get. And we've talked about this for us specifically, but it's important for people to know, like, if you're investing in a fund and you are not getting paid until they're making profits or until like year one, end of year one, that's very different. And that could be fine for some investors. That's exactly what they're looking for. Some people are looking for their money to be put to work right away. So that's very different. They don't want to wait a whole year. So for us, it's a monthly. And if you were to invest by like the end of the month, your interest starts accruing the following month, you get paid the first of the following month. So that is also a question I get a lot. When do I get paid? How often do I get paid? Kind of more of like details questions, I call them.
Yeah. And one just question popped in my head, which is like the softball of questions that we forgot to even put on our matrix and everything, which is a fund, whether you're a sponsor or an investor, is it a blind fund or is there an asset already targeted?
That's your softball question?
That's what I mean. Yeah. I mean, well,
as when you said that, I was like, I can guarantee this is not going to be like a... Well,
okay. So as an investor...
What's the preferred return? That's a softball question.
No, but the question... well, the question is, great, you're going to go raise $50 million. Yes. And just make your number. Do you have a... What, like, I'm investing in X, but is it a deal you already basically have under agreement doing due diligence on? Or are you getting this money to go find a deal? Or what,
you know, I've not once been asked that question. I'm not going to lie.
Well, because we're in notes and people know within notes typically that it's not.
The second you said that too, I was like, huh.
Softball. No, come on.
It is a softball, but it's not a question. I literally have not been asked that. But there you go. Mm-hmm. There's a question you should be asking.
Well, that's what I'm getting at is it's a question you should be asking. That you're probably not asking. And as a sponsor, it's something that where you should, I mean, I really hope if you started to put all of this together and you're raising money, you know what you're going to do with it.
Yeah, for
that's
sure.
That's why I was thinking it was a softball. It's a softball for the sponsor to be able to answer that question.
Yes.
Wow, my hair is really getting gray on the sides. I'm noticing. Damn.
Anything else? Any other common questions? I feel like we covered most of them.
Yeah.
I mean, the big ones are, is this guaranteed? What is the risk? And how does the economic environment of today affect this investment class?
My last final thoughts for anybody who's looking to go sponsor something is remember, it's not only a real estate deal, but you're managing a portfolio and a business. It's very different than owning a few single family rentals in your own portfolio that you have mortgages on. You have to balance cash flow. You have to balance how much money you're keeping in reserves, how much you've got going out the door. It's like running a business full time. And basically in that cash management is extremely, extremely important.
My final thoughts, and I feel like I've said this in past episodes before, because I just think it's so true, is if you are a newer investor or haven't invested in any syndications or funds or are just starting to diversify your portfolio, really knowing what you're looking for and being realistic about your goals. I think there is a lot of we'll make you millionaires overnight guarantees out there. And so being realistic about what your goals are, just getting started, knowing what your risk tolerance is, and then knowing who you're investing with, those three.
There's a lot of FOMO, you know, fear of missing out, that people want to get in. And people now, or last few years, the run up on the short-term rentals because people were bragging about how much of their money they're making on that. People who, again, I'll just use Bitcoin. There's the big run up on Bitcoin where it's going to go to 100,000. People running it up at 40, 50, 60 or wherever it got to. I have no clue where it's at right now, but it's probably not at 60. But be careful of stuff like if you're missing out on things and just stick to your guns and understand your investments and what the risk is involved. Because the worst thing you can do, and I see this happen to a lot of people, is they rush to fear of missing out. They get in an investment. And then it goes terribly bad. And then it sets them back for 5 to 10 years. Now, if you have a $100,000 investment and you lose 50% of it, now you have 50,000. Think of how long it will take you to get back to that at even a 10% annual return to get back to that number. It's going to take you basically like 7 years.
So. I'm thinking about all the investors I speak with or potential investors or current investors and just like the range of type of investor or investor where they are in their investment journey. And I'm just thinking of the people who have the one guy, for example, who's committed 700K. He started somewhere. Like everyone, I think they're, for me, I'm a little bit younger than you, Chris. And I think people my age are like, okay, like said, kind of used to chasing. It's been a great market for the past several years. But like by starting with something that you're investing in that can grow, that you can like get your feet wet, that's consistent, that's monthly or quarterly or whatever it might be, is a good place to start. You're not expecting to, again, get rich overnight. That's not what this is. And the people who are at the point of investing 500,000 plus, they get that. The people that are coming to us that this is a no-brainer to them, they get that. And so just being, again, it comes back to being realistic about what you're looking for and having the right expectations. And being able to play the long game, which, as we all know, us millennials are not great at.
Us Gen Z, what am I? Gen X?
I don't know.
Yeah, Gen X.
I'm a Gen X. Gen a little better.
No, yeah. That's the new ones, right? The new ones.
The new ones.
New ones, yeah. Oh, man.
Okay.
Well, you want to wrap it up?
I will wrap it up. It was fun. As fun as 5:30 a.m. can get. So with that, thank you guys so much for joining us today on this episode of Creating Wealth Simplified. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a friend, subscribe, or leave us a review. Till next time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show, share with a friend, or subscribe to the show and leave us a review.